With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration. Collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is another interview that I was fortunate enough to do at the Toronto International Film Festival this year. It's with Michelle Latimer, and she is a busy artist. She has two things at the film festival this year: Trickster, which is a miniseries going to be playing on CBC, and also a film called Inconvenient Indian, which not only do you need to see the film, you also need to read Thomas King's book that it's kind of based on. I hope I can say that, Michelle. It's absolutely based on it, but there's a whole lot more going on in this film. I've read the book. I've now seen the film. You need to do both. And please, I hope you make it through the conversation. Michelle and I had a blast. We talked about a whole lot of things, including Trickster, including the film as well, and Thomas King's work and what it was like working with him. We talked about this notion that we have this monolithic idea towards history, that there's more than one story out there, that words have power, and that Michelle really wants you, as the viewer, to come to your own conclusions. And she privileges images over the spoken word. I love that. And this idea that we need to make space and make ways for other people and other things. We need to interrupt the histories that we've maybe been, I guess Thomas King might say that we've been handed. And we need to ask questions. There's no such thing as a singular truth. And we talk about alternate histories and how things are interconnected and how that things need context and how we all want to, we all want a sense of place. We all want a sense of home, and why whiteness owns everything. And if it didn't grab you, I hope it did. You're going to love the film. I think you're going to really enjoy the conversation with Michelle. So stay tuned. Inconvenient Indian, Trickster's coming up on October the 7th, going to be airing on CBC Gem. And the beautiful thing about her new film is it's going to be at the Vancouver Film Festival and a few other festivals as well. Ultimately, it's going to live on Crave, and I believe they're hoping for a theatrical in 2021. So stay tuned for that. And don't forget, more information about my writing and my speaking, davidpecklive.com. You can buy a copy of Real Change is Incremental there. I'd love it if you did that. I'd also really love it, and I'm going to say this a few times, if you'd leave a review for the podcast. If you're liking what we do here and listening, a review goes a long way. Do you know that some people won't even answer emails if you don't have several hundred reviews on iTunes? That's just the way they operate. And so kind of frustrating when we know it's pretty easy to do, but can be, it's a bit of a pain in the neck. I acknowledge that, but I'd love it if you did. And then socially mediate us, please share it with your friends and family, sign up for our newsletter, but don't forget to leave us a review. And you can also advertise with Face to Face. FaceToFaceLive.ca is where it actually exists. You probably came through Spotify or iTunes or SoundCloud or something like that. But check out facetofacelive.ca. We're getting a lot of hits every month. You can advertise with us. You can advertise in our newsletter, and we'll also do shout outs for you as well. So reach out if you're looking to do something like that and you need a little bit more, of an online presence. We'd be happy to help. And don't forget rabble.ca. Face-to-face has been proudly on that platform now for several years. We've been working alongside Rabble and a whole host of other writers and thinkers and podcasters, news for the rest of us. And they are talking about other issues that matter. So check them out there. And that's about it. So thanks for listening. And we're well over 520 interviews. I just can't believe it. Some fun, interesting news, hopefully coming this year before 2021. Stay well, stay safe, and stay tuned for Michelle Latimer coming up, talking about Trickster and her brilliant, important, and stunning new film, Inconvenient Indian. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We are joined by a very special guest here with us today. Almost like two guests, because she's representing two different films and TV series. We've got Michelle Latimer here with us today to talk about Trickster and Inconvenient Indian, premiering at TIFF, Trickster on CBC Gem. Michelle, thanks for joining us on Face to Face today. I'm thrilled to have you.
Well, I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me, David.
Yeah, so... Okay, so I'm just going to say this out of the gate. There's no way we're going to have enough time to cover all the issues that you're addressing in the film, and you know, Thomas King addresses in the book, of course, and what's coming up in Trickster as well. But first off, I just want to say congratulations. Love the film. Love what I've seen of Trickster so far, by the way. Really cool. Really creepy. Can I say creepy?
I'd love you to say creepy.
Yeah. And the music is, Trickster, the music is fantastic. I mean, the music in both... Trickster and the film really, really strong. But anyway, I was moved and engaged on all levels. So thanks for that and congrats.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's been a real honor to be able to show these two works side by side.
So where do you want to step in? You want to talk Trickster a little bit first and then dive into to Inconvenient
Sure.
Indian? Yeah. Yeah. So were you pulled in by, I don't know, mythical sort of folklore as a kid, this whole notion of a trickster? By the way, I'm a magician, just so you know, like I do card tricks and sleight of hand stuff. So the whole notion of Trickster has been very much a part of my world for years. But yeah, tell me more about Trickster.
I grew up with that mythology, knowing about Trickster, and I grew up in Northwestern Ontario, and the Trickster stories are robust. But I also would say that I also grew up watching a lot of late night movies, like early David Cronenberg and David Lynch. And so, right. Yeah, I love body horror, and I wanted to homage the genre. And when I read Eden's book, it was just it had all those things in it.
Yeah, no, that's hilarious. Homage to the genre. So you're a Cronenberg fan.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, you're very, very Canadian on so many levels. Yeah. favorite Cronenberg film?
Naked Lunch.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. Although I do love The Brood. I do, yeah.
Okay.
That would be tough, yeah.
It is a very tough, yeah. I mean, History of Violence, of course. I mean, for me, Crash. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing Crash at the Uptown back in the day. I don't even know what year Crash came out, but anyway, so much. And I'm hoping to have David on the show one of these days too. But I've never reached out to him. One of these days, I will. So a mini series, 6 episodes. Really well done. It looks great. I mean, it's so slick and cool and hip. I have no idea where it's going, but honestly, from the get-go, I was in. Are there plans to go beyond the 6, or was this just, is that the package?
The package for first season is 6, but we have been green light for a second season, and I'm writing that right now as we speak with our team of writers.
Well, that's amazing. Oh, that's excellent. Well, good for you. So tell me, you know what, and I think this is a really nice sort of segue and by the way, that's coming on TV in like a couple of weeks, right? October the 7th, I believe, on CBC Gem, yes?
Yes, at 9 p.m.
Yeah, fantastic. And then once it's on there, it's available, right?
Yes, that's right. It'll be available for streaming on CBC Gem.
Perfect. Talk to me about the truth, and I hope this makes sense, the truth to be found in the oral tradition. I mean, that's very much, it seems to me, a part of trickster and of First Nations culture and many, well, every culture really, I suppose. And then, I don't know, is that a segue into Inconvenient Indian?
Well, I would say, I mean, I definitely, you know, grew up around oral storytelling. The beauty of oral storytelling is that there's an accountability and a responsibility for the listener to be taking just as much as the storyteller. And so I feel like it requires a very active listening, because sometimes when an elder tells a story, the point of the story or the moral of the story is not clear. You have to work to find it and to make sense of it for yourself. And so that is sort of the take on the filmmaking that I was doing. I'm presenting ideas in a visual language that I hope people can sit with and meditate on and come to their own conclusions. I don't want to feed information or be factual, but rather present ideas.
How have you found the response to Inconvenient has been so far? I mean, it must be pretty tough in this COVID-like era with TIFF and so on. And but has there been any kind of overreaction to it? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I would say, from my perspective, my expectation of Inconvenient Indian was that it would be sort of an art house film that reach a certain amount of people and maybe be intellectualized. But what I've found, which has been surprising to me and really exciting, is that a lot more people have seen the work and are talking about the work, and it doesn't feel like it's being niched. It actually feels like this story is hitting the mainstream in a way I could not have foretold, and that people are excited by the ideas and issues that are presented in it and the way it's being presented in a very visual kind of way that privileges images over language. And I never saw that coming, but it's been thrilling.
Hey, you know what? I love that. Privileging image over language. Why the focus on that? And I think I have to agree. Like, one of the last things I wrote, and I always write lots of notes, especially when I know I'm going to be interviewing. For me, this film was a real celebration just of art, full stop. And is that a fair assessment or across the board? I mean, the way you interact, the way you're, in my opinion, the way you're turning, documentary filmmaking kind of on its head in a way. I mean, you really have approached this in a different way, in a fresh way. Holy cow. What an unexpected opening. Beautiful and mind-boggling. And I just kind of went, whoa, where did that come from? Which is fantastic, right? I mean, isn't that what you want from the viewer?
I love when I'm in a movie and I don't know where it's going next.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I trust the filmmaker to take me there, get me there safely. Mm. So I was really inspired for the opening of the film by the title of Thomas, the title page of Thomas's book. When you pick up his book, you see this native man dressed in a headdress looking at a steamship. And for me, just that collection of images, the native man in the headdress, the steamship coming on the ocean, it says a lot.
It sure does, yeah.
And so I was looking for what would be a contemporary version of that. And that's where we traveled to Montana and we're watching a reenactment of a historical reenactment of the Battle of Little Bighorn, Custer Last Stand. And the performer, I asked him if he would mind kind of walking and cresting over this hill. And we VFX the skyline of Toronto there.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's fantastic. It's so good. And no Lake Ontario, right?
No.
The native is standing on Center Island, maybe? Or what might be Center Island today? Is that possible?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we took a little leap of, creative. But yes, you could look at it like that, sure.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. It's so good. You know, and Thomas King, I think, starts out by saying, you know, and this is what I love about your film and just filmmaking in general and storytelling, I suppose, but it's in the details. And I mean, it's so powerful. So do you believe that, the opening line, very close to it anyway, Thomas saying something to the effect of that the truth about stories is that's all we are.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you unpack that a little bit? Because so much, essentially one of the themes of the film is that I guess so much of who we are has been built on misrepresentation. How about we just say it out loud? It's been built on lies. So if that's true, then we've got a bit of an existential problem here, never mind all the other issues at play, Right? Isn't?
Yeah, I mean, just think how we look at history. We take sort of this monolithic idea that there's one history, one truth. Indigenous people, we know who we are. We our stories revolve around the lands we're from, the place we were born to, our stewardship of that place. And in some ways, we our past and our present are one because we walk with our ancestors in the present. And so it's not as linear as maybe Western storytelling can be. But this idea of how we frame history is a really, really important one. Because as Thomas says in his book, you have to be careful of the stories that are told, and you have to watch out for the stories that you tell. And in this, we're now in this like really interesting time in history where there's like a call out culture and a cancel culture, and people are, you know, taking to Facebook and social media to, you know, air their grievances. And those discussions are important to elicit change. But I think it's also important to remind ourselves that words have power. And what are the histories that we propose to be a singular truth? And there is no singular truth. And I think through the filmmaking process, I'm trying to show that, the editorialization of these ideas.
So I think you've already mentioned it, but again, it's early in the film. We have to be careful with the stories we're told. So as a parent, as a human being, is that not only the stories I tell, but how I interpret those, the questions that I ask about them? Isn't that kind of what Thomas is suggesting and you're suggesting at the same time? Because as a kid, you know, I'm told all these stories. I mean, how much damage was done in primary school? There's a question you don't hear very often. Right.
Well, I think it's also this idea of like equipping children and young people with the skills to actually critically dissect some of these ideas, to have critical thought, that it's not just everyone fall into rank and you know, you take your orders and you believe what you're told. It's like, no, we can engage in a critical dialogue around these thoughts. And I know even from a very small age, my parents were quite active in encouraging me to look critically, particularly at Christianity, in my own upbringing, because we had nuns come into my school. It was a public school, not in the Catholic school board, but we had nuns come into the school and teach Bible studies every Friday. And my parents were, you know, they ended up taking me out of those classes because they wanted to encourage critical thought around some of these stories that were taken as the only story to believe.
Right. That's kind of, it's interesting. You know, I was kind of saving this, but I've got to bring it up now. The one of the last quotes in the film is just worth the price of admission and worth going back and looking at all of King's work, in my opinion. But certainly I've read this and others, but the quote, "The unexamined confidence in Western civilization and the unwarranted certainty in Christianity." And then I'd love to know if you edited this, but a long pause and arrogance. Close quote. And he kind of says the problem, this is the problem that continues to kind of haunt us. I mean, there are other issues, huge issues like land, obviously. I'd love to talk about that. But could you have started the film with that quote? I mean, that's quite a damning statement, right?
I mean, I think to start the film with that quote would have been quite polarizing and maybe would have shut people down. I need to build to that idea.
Sure.
And so even though I knew I wanted that idea in the film, I was building sort of trust in my own storytelling from the audience. And also by the time you get to that place in the film, I think you know what kind of film this is. This is a film that's asking you to really look at your own belief systems and really question what you believe to be true, right? So so when he says that, what I take with the unexamined confidence in Western civilization is not just about a governance issue and a policy issue. It's also about capitalism and where we put our value systems. And capitalism extends to individualism, but it also extends to how we take care of the land. And what that means, and that it's not just there for the taking.
Yeah, that's another real theme. And again, any wonderful film is so layered, and there's so much going on in this film, and so many, you know, sort of tributaries, I guess you could say, off the river. But this idea that the land is alive, that it's not just a place, but it's something to be experienced, and it's something to indwell. I mean, you know, I so often hear First Nations folks talking about taking care of the land in a way that I just don't know of anyone else. I've traveled to, I think, over 45 countries. I don't know if I've ever really heard of anyone ever say, we need to take care of the land. you know, climate change folks from time to time will pick that notion up. But no, this is something about who we are. It's a spiritual thing. Anyway.
I think that's, you know, what you say about it being spiritual, like it's to be in relationship. So, you know, we're in a place in society where we're not even in relationship with each other, you know, so, but to be in relationship to all living things and to, and to respect those living things like they have a beating heart, you know, which we do believe that. We believe that the rocks do and the air does and the water and the insects and to respect them in the same way we respect ourselves.
How do you think you get there? I mean, I know it certainly comes out in the film too. I think that this, the young, I guess you skip a generation. You talk about multi-generational trauma. Another approach is, I know in a place that I've spent a lot of time in Cambodia, they talk about transgenerational traumas with respect to the Vietnam War and the Khmer Rouge and so on, and many, many other things too. And they talk about skipping a generation, you know, Cambodians saying, oh, my parents are not going to be able to go here. But, and my grandparents certainly aren't going to be able to, but I might. Is that why there's reason to be hopeful, or is there even reason to be hopeful?
I think there's always reason to be hopeful. I think we need that to sustain ourselves. And we always believe that the next generation can be stronger. They can learn from our mistakes. Mm-hmm. However, the cautionary tale of this is that history does repeat itself. We've seen that time and time again. And as Thomas sort of says by the end of the film, you know, in order for history to not repeat itself, we need to interrupt that history by really looking at where we are now in the present day and how, what is our culpability and how we move into our future. And that is connected to how we reflect on our past. And I think making those connections is really important because I think we silo these ideas. Oh, the past is in the past. Forget it. It's past. I can't make up for the wrongs of my ancestors.
Right.
But he's saying we can.
And you hear that a lot.
I know all the time.
I know. Well, and what I love about Thomas's writing is that the sense of humor, and I'd love to hear about that, you know, your personal interaction with him, but the sense of humor, the sarcasm, the irony, the juxtaposition, all of that really comes through to me. And I had never heard him speak before until your film. And I think it's just genius how he's able to do that and how he's able to get you questioning some of those things. Like, right. You know, that's hard to do in print. Right. Mm. I think you've done a beautiful job of it on film as well. But this idea that how do you step into the day that way to say, well, hang on a minute here. I need to challenge these assumptions. I need to ask better questions. I need to challenge that story I was just told. Hang on a minute. Is that really true? Mm-hmm. Or is there a better, you know, story to tell?
Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, I think about this a lot. Obviously, one of the contributions is being able to use my art as a tool for expression in these ways. But I also think about it takes giving up things in life to make space for other things, to make way for other things. And so it might mean, you know, something as simple as maybe you don't have two cars, or maybe you spend some time putting time into a volunteer organization, or maybe it means that you teach your kids an alternate history to maybe the one you were told and what you actually believe, but you want to give them a palette of what's out there in the world. I think there's so many ways to answer that, and it's so personal, but the point behind it is that we must activate ourselves into it. It's not enough to just try to air our political leanings by reposting an article on Facebook. It's about like what we're doing in our day-to-day lives to really activate these ideas.
Yeah. How are we making it, your comment about we're not even in relationship with one another. How are we keeping it alive in the truest sense? So that it is something that's, you know, front and center all of the time. And that's a challenge, it seems to me, for all of us. We're so, it seems to me, easily distracted, and during this whole COVID era, I mean, I've found it oddly kind of a time to focus, mm-hmm. but it's been interesting. So Thomas talks about it, and I think you've already alluded to it in our conversation here, but this idea of, you know, ignorance being a defense. Well, you know, it's, you know, we just got to get over it, or I can't apologize for what my grandparents did. And you know, what was the line? Oh, our grandparents didn't know any better.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that a lot. What do you say to that in conversation? You're hanging out with a group of people, friends, peers, you're having a drink, maybe on a patio.
It just doesn't matter what your grandparents knew or not, because right now it's like, what do you know? What do you know to be true? And how can we change that? You know, I do think it's really easy to say our grandparents didn't know any better, but then you watch, let's say in the residential school scene, you watch those children captured on camera and you hear the quotes from the leaders of the time.
Oh,
we need to butcher them or civilize them. And what we need to do.
That whole sequence, Michelle, it's just crazy talk. It's just
insane. But when you see children, it humanizes it in a way that I just don't feel words can do. When you see those children there ripped away from their parents and you hear those quotes, all I can say is it humanizes it in a way that you know in your depths. We know when something we're doing is wrong or right. We all have a compass inside of us. We know when something doesn't feel good. And the issue is more, can we stand then? Can we be the one to take a stand away from the group and say, this is not okay. I'm not okay with this. I'm not going to move forward with this. I'm not going to support these ideas. And, you know, we are seeing that, I think, in Canada, you know, with the recent Wet'suwet'en protests. I mean, the RCMP stormed those blockades and broke the Supreme Court laws, it angered all Canadians because I think they thought, okay, if they can do that with that law, they can do that with other things that I feel are laws that are important to me. And so there was an interconnectedness that I felt incited people, which was really exciting to me.
And you said there's always room for hope, I think was, is that in the younger generation? Is it going to be easier to convince them? I love that whole sequence of the fishing and, you know, kind of bringing people back, I guess, to their roots in a sense, these young people, so that, you know, that these are the leaders. These are the people, you know, teaching in schools and these are the politicians and maybe just maybe part of their story will connect them back to the land in some way. That was kind of what I took from that sequence. Mm-hmm. But once again, the intentionality of that, right? The agency of that is just, it's beautiful.
Thank you. I love that scene too, for that reason. I'm just so impressed by the young people today. I feel like they're better than my generation or their generation before. No, because and I have to feel that because you know, you want to feel that we're going to progress and evolve. But even just around, I think about some of the gender issues, my niece doesn't even bat her eyes at an idea of having a transgendered kid in her class. That was something I was completely unaware of as a child.
Yep.
But my niece is 8 and she doesn't even think twice of it. And I think that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, the wisdom, right? It just, it strikes you, or at least the relational wisdom of that. Yeah, no, I think that's a wonderful observation. Yeah. Thomas, he says, you know, federal authorities, I think he says federal authorities, politicians and the clergy, essentially around that whole ignorance notion, you know, knew better. They knew what these decisions were going to ultimately do. Mm-hmm. And you've got to wonder at what groupthink, the power of groupthink. I mean, was this really just about power? Was it really just about money and land? And I know Thomas says it's always been about land and it will always be about land. And he's probably right about that. But was there something else going on? You know, you talked about the moral compass. Why is it so hard? I mean, that's one of the takeaways from your film for me. How would I have behaved then, you know, versus now, right? Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, the 8-year-old whose understanding of these issues around gender and sexuality and so on, they know we didn't. What the hell's going on, right?
I feel like we do know, though, and that we often just, we reason it away.
Sweep it under the carpet.
Yeah. And that's, I think, what this film is asking us not to do. I'll never forget my first time in Berlin. I went to the SS museum and I looked at a picture and Hitler was giving a speech to thousands of Germans. And in the picture, everyone was heiling Hitler, had their arm in the air. And they have a circle in this photo to show one man standing with his arms crossed against his chest. Wow. And it made me think about this idea, the courage of one person to say, I go against all these thousands of people, this isn't right. And, you know, and we've seen people like that throughout our history, but I think we have to almost give ourselves permission that we can be those people. Ordinary people can do extraordinary things.
It's great. So good. A little shout out for Terrence Malick, because I'm a huge fan. Maybe you are too, but A Hidden Life was at the festival last year, and it focuses on one of those families and honestly, to the point of him not raising his arm and then being arrested in a lineup.
Yes.
And it did happen, not very often, but it did. So how do we get there? Is it telling better stories? Is it,
It's part of it for sure.
It's part of it, yeah. Right? There's no solution really. It seems to me it's gotta be pretty layered. And I think it's, you know, you said, it's interesting. You said you didn't want to open the film with that quote from Thomas King. Is that because you didn't, you know, potentially want, you know, didn't want any walkouts right away? Well, you didn't want to offend anybody right out of the gate? Oh, gee, I don't want people too angry about my...
No, it was more the context. Like, I feel that we're in an age of, like Twitter's the perfect example. You have so many characters and you get to say like two lines, two sentences.
Yep.
I think it needs, some things need context. Some of these deeper, richer ideas that are complex and nuanced, they need context. And so my film sets up the 90 minutes of context to then hit you with that last idea, which I think can resonate and you can sit with in a different way rather than just turn on the defense, you know, which might be someone's reaction if that's the first thing they're hearing out the gate and they feel like, oh, I've just come to see a film that's going to bark at me about how I should live my life. This is more kind of
how wrong I've been.
Provoking, some questioning, some thinking.
Well, this is why I love the way you open it, the film. I mean, here I sat down to watch this doc, and you open with that sequence, and I just thought, oh, hang on a minute, wait, did I get the screener copy right here? Which is beautiful, right? I love that turning it on its head, and I think that works on a whole tacit and intuitive level, which I think is, in my opinion, is much more welcoming and inviting. So anyway, again, well done on that. It was just such a beautiful opening, worth the price of admission for sure.
Thank you so much.
I think one of the takeaways for me. Sorry, I just had to deal with the phone ringing in the background there. One of the takeaways for me, this idea, and we certainly touched on it, but you know, Turtle Island, I'm a visitor, I'm a guest. How do we remind ourselves of that? You know, do we need to actually post that in our bedrooms and our living rooms and our rear view mirrors? Because I think if we actually approached it that way, life would be a lot. I mean, can I be that prescriptive, Michelle?
Well, the thing is, I think about people and everyone wants to fit in. Everyone wants a sense of place. Everyone wants to say, I'm from here. So when you've been born on this land, if you can't say you're from here, then that's pretty hard to say, I'm a visitor, I'm a guest. That idea of like, but I want to be from somewhere. So I don't want to take that away from people, but I would use this example. When I walk in the woods or when I swim in the ocean, I'm very aware that I'm not at the top of the food chain, that I'm not, this isn't, you know what I mean? When I walk in the woods, I walk and I go, okay, I'm from this place where these woods exist, but I am not, you know, central to this. And I think reminding ourselves of that position, that we share these lands and that some people have different roles on these lands than others, and making space for all of that contribution, that's the difference. It's like an ego thing.
How for me, this is an environmental film as well. And like I said, any great film for me is layered. It peels back a lot of layers. It raises a whole lot of questions. And I think there's a truck full of questions here that we could address. And we're coming up, I think, on the next few minutes on the, you know, wrapping up the interview. And I knew this was going to happen. It's always the sign of a great interview, by the way, is that you get to the end and you're like, hang on a minute. I barely got out of the gate. Yeah, what's going on? Yeah.
It's like you want to have a few more beers at a pub or something and just keep the conversation going.
Yeah. Let's keep it going. Yeah. The Q&A was only 12 minutes. What's going on? They didn't cut to my question. There's just the environmental aspects of this film. Some of the images that you show, and I think it's around the protest images as well. I mean, this is a protest film. This is an activist film, but it's environmental. It's philosophical. It's historical. It's so many things. Did you realize you would be sort of, uncovering so much in, what is it, 90 minutes?
You never know when
you started.
It's like it's a journey, and I work very intuitively. I would say my editor works very intuitively. We both work in that way. So you might have an idea of like what you want to show, but how you get there is part of the journey and part of the discovery of making the film. But I will say this, my first time seeing the Alberta tar sands in person, it took my breath away. It was absolutely heartbreaking. And I thought, if I ever have an opportunity to show the mass of this destruction, I want to be able to do that. So filmmaking is a wonderful opportunity to kind of show the world what maybe some people haven't had the opportunity to see with their own eyes.
And isn't that what's so beautiful about storytelling, you know, to Thomas's point, that if we can get them somewhat right, or if we can at least question the stories that we're told and continue to present ourselves with them in film and in print, I don't know. Richard Wagamese, didn't he say stories are meant to heal?
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, what a beautiful way to approach it all. You know, I think he also says nothing's changed in 150 years, or at least someone does in the film.
Yes, that's Molly Wickham. She's the warrior woman from Wet'suwet'en. Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty grim, right? That's pretty cynical, but I think it's a fair take. Are we going to say that again in another 150?
I really hope not. Yeah. I can't say definitively, because I would have liked to see more change before now, but I really hope not.
Yeah, and I mean, I hope not either. And you and I won't be around to see, and I guess our kids won't be either. But it seems to me that there is groundswell. Might not be the right word or phrase, but it does seem like there's a lot, many reasons to be hopeful. Yeah, I mean, I read several different news agencies every morning, and you go, yeah, I'm not sure there's a lot of reasons to be cheerful today, but there really is. Right. And how do we stay focused on those things, I think is the question for me. I love how you say, you know, the younger generation's reclaiming. Mm-hmm. They're kind of taking it back in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful thing. Michelle, I personally could chat all afternoon about the film. There's so many other things. I'm looking at my I've got about 9 or 10 pages of notes here. Most of my listeners will be rolling their eyes, because that's just, that's just kind of my way. But, how long are we going to live behind that ignorance? You know, we talked a little bit before. Before I hit the record button, and I've got I am a good colonial, you know, small g. My father's from Britain. I have a UK passport. I've traveled the world, and I've seen the effects of that. I guess some positive and many negative. How do I step into that and really own it? You know, or do I even need to? Or is it really now just about being intentional in the way I engage with others? It's probably way simpler than I'm trying to make it here.
I think the engaging is important. But, you know, it's funny, because I feel, and excuse me, I'm going to be crass, but I feel like whiteness owns everything. And it's like, maybe it's about not owning it. Like, maybe it's about making space. And then when you say the intentional, the mindfulness, yes, but sometimes it's like giving space, even when you feel like you know the answer, to allow for someone else to speak, because maybe they are thinking or have an answer that would never have even entered your mind, you know? And I think when I speak about that, I'm not speaking about you, the individual, as much as I'm speaking about a collective consciousness of how we make space for more stories, more people, more positions for people to take leadership. These are all really important things to think about. There's a new way that things can be done.
I love the phrase, make space for stories. Doesn't Thomas in the film ask the question, what do whites want? And I mean, he's kind of asking that with a footnote attached to it.
Yes, because he says that it's in the context of, people always say, especially when they see like railway blockades or occupations, they say, well, what do the Indians want? Like, we've had Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Right. They have this, they have that. What more do they want? And Thomas says, no, the real question we should be asking is, what do whites want? And I think, I mean, this question is a complicated question, but I do think at the heart of it, we are talking about resource extraction and how the lands are being used for the continued evolution of capitalism and how that capitalism wipes out everything around it in the name of profit.
And I think it's just remarkable how layered your film is. And again, congratulations. Before we go, whiteness owns everything. For my listeners, for me, for future reference, create space for others. Create space for other stories. Is that could that be the tagline for our conversation today? Is that the takeaway? And I don't want to be.
I'd be okay with that.
Well, there's so many, right? And again, everyone, please not only leave a review for Face to Face in this interview with Michelle today, but get out and see this film. So, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that later, and we're going to do what we can to get people out to see it, Michelle. And just before we wrap, and I'm going to read that quote again from Thomas, but you're looking at a theatrical in 2021, I believe, Vancouver Film Festival and others coming soon to at least a digital cinema near you.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, oh, that's amazing.
And eventually the film will live on Crave, so people will be able to stream it on Bell if they subscribe to Crave.
Oh, that's fantastic, and I hope it drives people to Thomas's writing as well. Can you tell me, just as we wrap up here, we've only got a couple minutes, and I'm really trying to squeeze a little bit more out of you here, but what was it like working with Thomas King?
Thomas is a trickster. He is the essence of a trickster. He's provocative, funny, witty, searing, irreverent. Yeah. He's all of the playful, all of those things.
Oh, that's great. So it was a great experience.
Yeah, he's a wonderful man, and I feel really honored to be able to have met and worked with him.
Honestly, I was just so thrilled when I saw the film, and then when we got this this interview booked. He's a guy that I would love to interview at some point down the road. My guess is he'd probably say no.
I don't know. You should ask him. He's a very playful man, and he's very curious as well about life and people. Yeah.
Oh, fun. Oh, that's interesting. Well, that's great. Well, listen, Michelle, what a pleasure chatting with you today, and thank you for opening my eyes just a little wider, and for introducing me to a whole new series of questions and things to think about. Some beautiful, stunning images in the film, and it's an important film. It's a brilliant film. It's one everyone needs to see, certainly every Canadian. But what I love about your film, and having traveled so much, I see so many connections to other races and other cultures and other communities that can learn from Inconvenient Indian. So thanks for that. We've been talking to Michelle Latimer here today on Face to Face, and about her, not only her film Inconvenient Indian, but her new TV series Trickster. You've been really busy, Michelle.
Yeah, a little.
Last question. What's next?
Well, we've been greenlit for season 2 of Trickster, so I'm very busy writing that right now. And then I hope to also shoot my scripted feature this year.
Wow. Well, keep getting those things on your to-do list. I look forward to what's next. We've been talking to Michelle Latimer today here on Face to Face. And don't forget, folks, leave a review. It helps us a great deal on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen. And again, Michelle, thanks for your time and generosity here today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the conversation. Thank you.